We are, get this, 2 weeks out from the end of this series on David. I know that's sad. We have this week and next week left, and maybe that causes a little tear to trickle down your cheek. It has mine. I love the story of David, one of my favorite characters in Scripture, and this has been a very fun series to journey through with all of you. Now, it was said of David that he was a man after God's own heart, and part of this series was to uncover or discover what it was that made David a man after God's own heart. And one thing we've seen is that David was a man after God's own heart because he was always after God's heart, except for the times when he wasn't. You know, he was always chasing God, except for the times when he wasn't chasing God. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. But the theme verse for this series, I hope you've memorized it already, is some words that David spoke in Psalm 25, verse 1 and 5. And the verse says this: "In you, Lord, my God, I put my trust. My hope is in you all day long." And what we found in this series is that whenever David lived by his own words, whenever he was chasing God and he was putting his trust in God and his hope in God, his life went pretty smooth. But whenever he kind of took life into his own hands and did it his own way, and he stopped trusting God and stopped putting his hope in God, his life became unmanageable. I bet if you know anything about David, the very first thing you learned about David was probably the story of David and Goliath, right? The time of David's, a story of David's greatest or most famous, I should say, his most famous success when he lived this perfectly, right? I mean, he saw the giant, he slayed the giant because he put his trust in God. His hope was in God all day long. It was this miracle, this epic moment of, you know, famous success. But I bet if you knew anything more about David than just David and Goliath, the second thing that you learned about David was the opposite end of the spectrum. The story of David and Bathsheba, right? Where if David and Goliath was the story where he lived this perfectly, David and Bathsheba is where he took these words and threw them out the window and said, "I'm gonna do it my way, I'm gonna live my way, and I'm gonna take control of life and I'm gonna do it the way I want. I'm gonna live not under the rule of God, I'm gonna live over the rule of God. I'm gonna live over the rule of God." You know, we all like autonomy, don't we? I mean, personal autonomy in our culture, in our democracy in North America, is probably one of our greatest values. We don't like it when someone, it doesn't matter who the someone is, when someone tells us what we should be or how we should live, right? I mean, autonomy is all about, you know, who and what I should be is up to me, and my life is mine to decide. My life is mine to decide. And we don't like it when other people start telling us what we should be or how we should live, right? We don't like it when our mom tells us how we should live. We don't like it when our dad, we don't like it when our husband tells us what we should do. We don't like it when our wife tells us what we should do. We don't like it when the pastor tells us what we should do, right? I mean, there's just something like personal autonomy. It's such a high, high value in our culture. But you know, personal autonomy is all about exercising freedom. But what if autonomy led to a prison of our own making, a prison of self? See, the desire of autonomy is that I'm going to be free and I'm going to be out from under the rule of any rule, because I'm going to be completely free to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. I want to be free. But what if that desire for autonomy to be free is actually just a prison of our own making, a prison of our own making? You know, I bet there's been times in your life when you wanted to be free. You wanted to be out from under the roof of whoever it was, right? Probably as a teenager. Well, as a teenager, you were like looking forward to the time when you would move out from your home, from out under your parents' roof, right? And finally, you could do what you wanted, when you wanted, with whom you wanted. I mean, your parents wouldn't be there to say curfews at this time, and you wouldn't have a curfew. You're in charge, right? I mean, you're finally free. And then you left home and you found out there were still restrictions. You weren't actually free, right? Maybe the restriction you ran into was the restriction of finances. You realize life costs money and I can't do what I want when I want because I don't have the money to do that. Maybe the restriction you ran into was the restriction of a dance partner, right? There were some things you wanted to do, but you had to convince a friend or a boyfriend or a girlfriend to join you. You couldn't do it alone. And suddenly you couldn't just do what you wanted, when you wanted, with whom you wanted, because you lacked a dance partner. Maybe your restriction was the government. You got out from under your parents' roof and you found out there's still the government's roof over your head and you're like, there's speed limits and I can't just do what I want when I want, right? And so there's this idea that we want freedom to do what we want when we want, but there are limits to our freedom. Now imagine, just for a second, imagine if you had all the power, all the authority, all the money, all the ability that you could ever want to do exactly as you pleased whenever you want. Just imagine that. There were no restrictions. You could influence people. You could, you know, you had all of that. Now imagine that for a second. Now stop, because you'll never have that, okay? Just so you know, you'll never have that. But we imagine if we could have that. And then there's a desire in us to live that way. And in fact, I think all of us at some point have lived that way. And I know a guy who actually had all of that power, all of that money, and all of that authority. A guy that we've been studying this entire series, David. And he there was no roof over his head. There was no government roof over his head. He was the government. I mean, he was king. He had the money. He had the ability, the power to influence people to do as he wanted. And so there was no authority over his head. There was no roof over his head. In fact, in the story, we find out that he was not under a roof. He was actually on the roof, which happens to be a problem in the story. That's a bad joke. Anyway, so this is the story of David and Bathsheba. But really, this is the story of you and I when we decide we're going to do it our way. And we're not going to live under the rule, and you pick the rule. And we're going to see in David's story, there was a lot of rules. And you pick the rule, and he decided, I'm not living under that rule. I'm going to live over the rule. I'm going to be autonomous. And this shows the dark side of autonomy. The story's found in 2 Samuel chapter 11. If you have your Bibles, you can go there. It says this, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, there was a general rule, an expectation. It was, I don't know if a cultural rule, but this is what kings did. The springtime is a time of war. Kings go out to war to protect their lands, to protect their people. In the springtime, when kings go out to war, David didn't. Instead, he sent, and I want you, I didn't do this, so you're going to have to do this on your own. I want you to count the times that David sent, does something to control the situation. It's all throughout this story. He's always the one sending, doing this. He's in charge. It's going to be done his way. David sent, instead of going to war, he sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army, instead of him going and doing what he was supposed to be doing, not, legally, but just kind of what the general rule was, he doesn't. Well, they destroyed the Ammonites, they besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. You know, it's interesting, David doesn't sin at this part. It's not like he's doing something wrong against God. He just decides, you know, that rule of, you know, kings go out to war and protect their lands in the springtime, you know, this general rule that's kind of out there, he just decides to just live above that general rule. And it kind of shows us something that I think is important. Often the journey into our greatest regrets begins with a very innocent decision. That's not going to lead anywhere. Generally speaking, this is what people do. I'm going to do it a little different. I'm going to just kind of play above the rule. I'm going to play above the rule. And David does. And one evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of his palace. Now, he probably kind of had an idea of what he was doing. But here's a picture of Jerusalem in the first century. So this is about 1,000 years before David. The temple's over here. You can disregard that because the temple wasn't built yet. Jerusalem was pretty much this southern area of what was Jerusalem in the first century. Now, you can't really see it very well in the photo. But the city of Jerusalem is on a huge slope going downward this way. And so this is the top area of Jerusalem. Probably David's palace was over here. And the rest of the city was this way. When we were in Jerusalem a few years back, we stood where they believed David's palace was up in this area. And from that vantage point, you can see down over everything. And David could see down and he could see, well, what we find out, he could see everything. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful, like kind of like candy for the eyes. And it caught his attention. Probably, you know, her bathing caught his attention. It does that to men. It caught his attention, which wasn't the problem. The problem was when a glance becomes a gaze, you have a problem. And David was caught, his attention was caught with this woman bathing, which wasn't the problem, but he allowed a glance to become a gaze. And he invited that gaze and he started journeying down that path. He journeyed down that path. I think we stumbled over a couple verses here. Not sure how that happened. Do you want to go to verse 3, Maureen? I think that's where we were. So he allowed this glance to become a gaze. Can you find it, Maureen? There we go. So David sent someone to find out about her. And the man said, she is Bathsheba, and this is really, really important, super important. He doesn't stop there. He's trying to hint, hint, nudge, nudge David. She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Now, pretty much all of these words don't really mean a lot to us because we don't really know all these people, but this word. Wife, right? That kind of catches us. That would be a hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Whatever you were planning to do with Bathsheba, she is married. Don't do it, David, right? But what the messenger is trying to do, he's trying to hint, hint, nudge, nudge David by describing who Bathsheba is. And to give you a picture just how small David's world was, I want to describe for you who Eliam was and who Uriah was to David. So Bathsheba is the daughter of Eliam, and we know this from scripture that Eliam was one of David's 30 mighty men. So David had this group of 30 men that were heroic. They did all sorts of heroic deeds. They fought in battles. They were kind of like the best fighters in his army. And these were kind of like his personal bodyguard. They went with him wherever he went. These 30 mighty men, they would have been the guys that David slept in the desert with. He went to hell and back again. He faced, you know, high water with them. These were the men that probably each one of them at some point in David's life, there had been an arrow coming to pierce the king's heart and they stood in front of it and blocked it. There was a sword to coming in a battle to decapitate the king and they stopped it. I mean, these were David's best friends. They had been through everything together. And so the messenger says, remember this girl's Bathsheba. She's the daughter of Eliam, one of your best friends. Don't do this. Well, it goes on. Eliam was actually the son of Ahithophel. Now that's a bit of a hard word to say, so I want you all to try and say it just for fun. Try and say Ahithophel 3 times really fast. On the count of 3, 1, 2, 3, go. Yeah, so that's what I thought. It's a difficult one. Eliam was the son of Ahithophel, and this is what we know about Ahithophel. Ahithophel was David's most trusted advisor. In 1 Samuel, we find out that pretty much whatever Ahithophel said was gold in the king's court. It was like when Ahithophel spoke and gave advice, it was like God had just spoken. He was one of David's closest friends. So Bathsheba is the granddaughter to Ahithophel, the daughter of Eliam, some of David's closest friends in his sphere of friends. And then on top of that, Uriah was also one of David's 30 mighty men. So here's this woman who's connected in all sorts of ways to David. And the messenger says, David, don't do what you're about to do. These are your friends, but do you know what? David does what he wants, when he wants, with whom he wants, and he will be under no rule, including the rule of friendship and the rule of loyalty, and he plays above the rule. And so instead of walking away, David sent messengers to get her, and she came to him, and he slept with her. And then the author tells us something very interesting. Now, she was purifying herself from her monthly uncleanness, which means this. It is impossible for her to currently be pregnant. She just came through her time. Secondly, because she just came through her time, she has an ability right now to become pregnant, which is exactly what happens. Then she went back home and the woman, Bathsheba, conceived and sent word to David saying, I am pregnant. You know, in the time, in the season, in the time of the year when kings go out to war, that's what they do. David played above the rules. He says, I'm staying home. And when a friendship and loyalty would say, don't do this, David said, I'm going to play above the rule of friendship. I'm going to play above the rule of loyalty. And I'm going to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. When kings go out to war to protect their land, David stayed home to abuse and take advantage of his people. And he's got a problem, but it's no problem for someone who's in charge, right? David's going to figure it out. And so he does. So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Job was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. You know, it's kind of like small talk. Hey, how's things going out on the battlefield? Kind of loosen up Uriah. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet. Better yet, have your wife wash your feet. Smell the scent of her perfume. It's been a long time since you've seen your wife. And just drink in and enjoy the pleasure of the one you're married to." And so Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. "Go relax, Uriah. Take pleasure in the wife of your youth, in the one whom you love, whom you miss so much," hoping that this would cover up the pregnancy that had been created by David. But he's got a problem. Uriah is the problem. Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. Where David plays above the rule, Uriah is a man who plays underneath the rule. And here's the rule. David finds out about it first. And he's told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, "Haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home? I mean, you've been living in tents. You've been, you know, suffering. You've been facing death every day. This is your chance to experience some pleasure and some joy in your wife. Why didn't you go home?" And Uriah says, "Because I play under the rule." And then he describes the rules in which he plays and he lives under. Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents. God's presence is out there. My men are out there. My commander, Joab, and my Lord's men are camped in the open country. This would be so disloyal to them. A good friend would not go and take pleasure when you know your best friends are out facing death for you. I can't do that. I play under the rule of friendship." And he says, how could I go to my house to eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing." In fact, David doesn't just play under the rule of friendship and loyalty. He lives his life under the rule of God and under the rule of his own king, David. See, in 1 Samuel chapter 21, David had told all of his fighting men, he said, "Listen, when we go out to battle, I want you to remain pure and not to be intimate with your spouse. And here's why, because the law says in Leviticus, I think it's 15, that when you do God's work, when you're doing the Lord's work, you should remain pure. And when we fight God's battles, it's kind of like we're doing God's work. So I want you to remain pure." And so now David says, "You should go do this." And Uriah says, "I live under the rule of my king. I live under the rule of God and his word. I live under the rule of loyalty and friendship. I can't do such a thing." And here's the deal. David, living over the rule, can't sleep at night because of what his life has become. Uriah lives under the rule, and he is completely free. Sleeping at night, guilt-free. Well, David's got a problem, but he's going to work it out. Then David said to him, "Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. And David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. David is trying absolutely everything to get Uriah to drop his guard, to give in to his human desires and passions. For David or Uriah to let go of living under the rule of what it means to be a friend, a loyal friend, and to live under the rule of God. But he's got a problem. He's always got a problem. David's got a problem. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. He continued in his integrity. Well, David has only one more option, and he takes the last option to free himself from the guilt of what he's done with Bathsheba. And in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. And in the letter he wrote, "Put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest, then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die. David sends Uriah's death sentence with Uriah, knowing Uriah is completely trustworthy. He lives under the rule of God. And so Uriah takes this, and Joab. So while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. And when the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite fell. And this is important. Some of the men in David's army fell. It was not only Uriah that suffered the consequences of David's sin and his trying to cover up his sin. It was not only Uriah, who was an innocent one, who suffered the autonomy of the king, who decided to do what he wanted, when he wanted, with whom he wanted. There were other innocent men, husbands of wives, sons of mothers and fathers, a father of sons and daughters, who back home were mourning the loss of their brother, their father, and their husband, because David decided to play above the rule. Well, Joab, after all this had taken place, Joab sent David a full account of the battle, and he instructed the messenger. He said, here's what you need to say. When you have finished giving the king this account of the battle, that, you know, we had the siege, we put some men up front, some of them died, the king's anger might flare up again, and he may ask you, why did you get so close to the city to fight? Didn't you know, everybody knows, didn't you know that they would shoot arrows from the wall? I mean, everybody knows this. Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerub-Besheth? Didn't a woman drop an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died in Tebez? Why did you get so close to the wall? Everyone knows if you've got the city sieged, you just starve them out. You wait until they surrender. Why would you go get close to the wall where you can die? And Joab anticipates that David might respond this way because it was so foolish. And if he asks you this, Joab says, then say to him, moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead. And I think Joab had an idea that something was up. And that's why Joab doesn't say, moreover, Uriah the Hittite is dead. He says, your servant, this guy who risked his life to save your life, one of your best friends, wake up, David, your servant, loyal friend, is dead. And David's response shows just how cold and how hard he's become. David told the messenger, say this to Joab, don't let this upset you. The sword devours, you know, one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy it. Say this to encourage Joab. In essence, David said, the sword devours one as well as another. People die in war. Don't worry about it. Let's move on. One of David's closest friends, wife of one of his closest friends, son-in-law of one of his closest friends, son-in-law of one of his closest friends. All of this, it didn't matter to David. He's become so hard in his desire to live for me, myself, and I. He's left with me, myself, and I. And nothing else matter. He could care less about others. All that matters to David is him. Well, when Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. And after the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. And it was completely covered up, and no one would ever know, right? Because now they're married, and she's going to get pregnant, but it happened after the marriage. No one will know what David did, almost. The writer ends with this, but the thing David had done displeased the Lord. David lived above the rule, but there was one rule he could never live above, and that was the rule of God. And although no one would find out, God would find out, because God knows all things. And we're told that God was displeased with him. Even in David's running and his running away from God in his web of sin, God did not leave David alone. He tracked him down. And this is where we're going to pick up the story next week as we continue in the story of David and Bathsheba. But for today, I think there's a desire in each of us for autonomy. we want to do what we want when we want, probably with whom we want. And we don't like anyone telling us how we should live or what we should do or who we should be. It's up to us to decide. But I think there's a dark side to autonomy. And I think the story of David and Bathsheba show us the dark side of autonomy when we decide to live above the rule rather than underneath the rule. And the dark side of autonomy is what David did. And that is, he gave to his every whim and passion and desire. And in the end, he was left all by himself. He'd run from God. He'd pushed away his friends. He'd pushed away his advisor. He'd pushed away those who were closest to us because he didn't live under the rule. He lived over the rule. And he thought he could do what he wanted, when he wanted, with whom he wanted. And in the end, it left him all alone. See, the hope of autonomy, the desire we have in autonomy is that we'll finally be free from every rule. But here's the truth. We are all ruled. All of us are ruled. You can't get away from being ruled. We are all ruled. The question is this: does the authority that rules you enslave you or free you? We're all ruled, and even in our autonomy, in our desire to be autonomous, to have no one rule me, in the end, we are ruled by our own selves. And maybe in our desire to be over every rule, we just redefine the rules, don't we? We don't like that rule because it makes me feel bad. I don't like how you define sin, so I'm going to redefine sin because that makes me feel bad. I'm going to redefine right and wrong. I'm going to redefine sex and sexuality. I'm going to redefine what it means to be a friend, because if it doesn't benefit me, I just have to redefine to make it fit me. And in the end, we are enslaved to our own selves. And we're still enslaved. So we're all ruled. The question isn't, can I get out from being ruled? The question is there a ruler who will set me free? And you and I are not the ruler. There is only one rule that frees us, and that is the rule of God himself. You know, we're all ruled. Does the authority that rules you enslave or free? Now, I want to leave you today with something helpful and something hopeful, okay? And here's the helpful piece. It's a question. It's kind of taking this question a step further. And here's the question. What rule are you currently trying to live over rather than under? What rule? And maybe there's simple rules. You know, is there a friendship rule that you're just trying to live over? And it doesn't matter, friends, you know, backstabbing, as long as it benefits me, I'm going to live over that friendship rule. Maybe there's a father rule. And you know what it means to be a good father, but you're just going to kind of live over the rule of what it means to be a good father, or over the rule of what it means to be a mother, or over the rule of what it looks like to be a husband or a wife. I'm just going to live over the rule of what it means to be a good worker or a good employer. What rule are you currently trying to live over rather than under? I'm just going to live over the rule of the government. What rule are you currently trying to live over rather than under? And ultimately, when it comes to God, what rule of God are you trying to live over rather than under? And maybe it seems insignificant to you. It's not even a sin issue yet. But remember, often the journey into our greatest regrets begins with a very innocent decision. Like when kings go off to war, it's just what people expect the king to do, and he doesn't do it. You're just living over the rule. What rule are you currently trying to live over rather than under? What rule are you currently trying to live? And you're just going to kind of live like marriage doesn't matter. You're going to kind of live like, well, parenting, being a father or mother, having a mom and dad, I'm just going to live over that rule. And in the process, you destroy your marriage and you destroy your friendships and you destroy your relationship with your parents. Because you're simply just trying to live over the rule and you destroy your relationship with God. So that's the helpful point. Do some inventory. What rule are you trying to live over rather than under? And here's the hopeful part. And I think the story of David and Bathsheba shows this so significantly. Because David was caught in a web of sin he had created, enslaved to himself. He had run from God as far as you can run from God. And you know, that's our story as well. We've all run from God. And we all tried to live above the rule of God rather than under the rule of God. And we did it our way instead of God's way. And we said, I want to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. And God's word says this, but I don't care. And we get caught in a web of sin. And maybe that's you. You didn't live under the rule and you've destroyed your relationships. You've destroyed your marriage. You've destroyed the relationship with your children or your parents. You've destroyed your relationship with God. You've just been living over the rule. And now you find yourself where all autonomy leads, alone, by yourself, enslaved to yourself. And you wonder, could God ever accept me? I've run so far from him. Would he ever take me back? What would I have to do to earn my way back into his good books? And the story of David and Bathsheba shows us this, that God's love reaches past our sin, and even past our resistance to him. When David had run, and he was in his lowest moment, the text ends with this, and we're going to pick up there next week. The Lord was displeased with him. God never left him. He was in his corner. His presence was still present in David's life, and God would chase David down to recapture his heart. This is the hope of Christ. Paul says to the Romans, he says, but God demonstrates, he shows his love, he displays his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God didn't wait and say, okay, you screwed it up, you messed it up, you're in the darkest place of your life, now do this, this, and this, and you'll earn your way back into my good books. While we were sinners, while we were far from him, while we were running from God, God, through his grace, through the outstretched arms of Christ on a cross, reach out to you and I in our darkness. And he dies for us. God's love reaches past our sin. But not just past our sin. It reaches past our resistance to God. Imagine that. While we resist God, his love reaches past our own resistance. David wrote it this way in Psalm 139. It says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I just start running, can I get away from you, God? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you're still there. The word depths is literally the word sheol, which means the underworld, the place of the grave, the place of the dead, the dwelling of the dead. There's no life there. If I make my bed in the underworld, in the place that there is no living, can I escape you? And David says, even there, God's presence is present. You cannot outrun the Lord. You cannot outrun God and his love. It reaches past our resistance and past our sin through the outstretched arms of Christ, and it reaches for you. And he doesn't say you have to earn my love back. He simply offers it as a gift for us to receive, So the helpful thing is this. We're all ruled. Does the rule or the authority that you're under enslave you or free you? And the follow-up question is, what rule are you trying to live over rather than under? Uriah slept at night. He was a man under the rule. David didn't sleep at night. And the hopeful point, God's love reaches past our sin and past our resistance to him. You can't outrun his love. He's reaching out to you today. And maybe you feel like you're in the darkest of darkest moments. You're in Sheol, in the underworld. You're alone. God meets you right there. We're going to close with a song. I want to invite the team back up. And Caitlin's going to sing a song. It may be new to you. But I couldn't think of a better way to punctuate this message, that God's love reaches past our sin and past our resistance to him. The chorus of the song says this, and this is our story, isn't it? You chased me down when I don't deserve it. You showed me love. You don't make me earn it. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. I make a mess and I just start running, hoping that you won't know. Haven't you been there? making a mess of your life and just running from God, hoping he never finds out. Just like David. When I'm lost and I'm low in a place that I think, God, you won't go, you chase me down.
Why do I do things I hate? Why do I say things that I shouldn't say when I know better? I could love better. Some days I take it too far. Sometimes the world gets the best of my heart, and I know who I am till I forget just who I am. When I find myself again, standing knee deep in my sin, you chase me down. When I don't deserve it, you show me love. You don't make me earn it. I make a mess and I just start running, hoping that you won't know. Oh, when I'm lost and I'm low, you chase me down. Sometimes I can't believe you stay when you don't have to, 'cause you won't need whatever that looks like. Yeah, that's what love looks like. You chase me down. When I don't deserve it, you show me love, and you make me earn it. I make a mess, and I just start running, hoping that you won't know. Oh, when I'm lost and I'm low, in a place that I think you won't go, you chase me down. You chase. I know this must be grace, 'cause you chase. You chase me down when I don't deserve it. You show me.
God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. While we were in that low place, we didn't think God would go. His presence is always present. May you go in that grace. And in that grace, live in the freedom as you live under the rule of God.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at MountOliveEFC.com. We'll see you next time.